to be back. How you doing, man?
I am good. I have come out the other side of the Destiny 2 2-week day one raid grind. So I'm back. I'm consistently playing DSA again because I wasn't there for a little bit. I was getting my dailies done, and that was kind of it for a couple
baseline.
Of weeks. So, yeah, did my best to keep my activity going, and now we're here. But I'm excited to be back. A lot happened while I was gone, so we're gonna chat a lot about that. Because of course, Glue decided to launch things at time that were hyper inconvenient for me, and it's unacceptable. They should definitely consider my life above their release schedule.
Of course.
But how about you? How are you today?
For lack of a better term, I'm exhausted. It's been a very active day between doing a roster rework of my own as well as another club member's, diving into trying to dissect more into the Beauty and the Beast kits, which we'll get into in this podcast, trying to understand what's coming down the pipeline prior to patch notes and then with today's patch notes, streaming twice, watching three other streams. It's been a very DSA day, which culminates in this. And I feel like I'm ready. I'm prepared. That's so good. Let's see what they bring. Let's see what they bring.
I have been in Thanksgiving and wife's birthday prep mode. So we will rely on your DSAing and my hosting, which is lucky because that's how this works every time.
Fine by me.
So the Main Street Gazette this week, our main segment, is going to be the extended edition. Just for information, the Sprucing Up Main Street segment that got a lot of positive feedback last time we did it is on hiatus this week just because we're catching up on 3 weeks worth of news. And Tinfoil Hat will be purely about Beauty and the Beast as a thing. But we're mostly going to be in news and how it has impacted the game as a whole, kind of a state of the game sort of thing. So probably for most people, the biggest news is raids launched as a thing. So we have shown that we were in fact ready to raid universally as a group. Let's talk about first raid impressions of your first raid experience. We'll start with you, Matt, because I know you did a higher tier of raid baseline than I did as your starter, because you're in a harder core club than me. But what were your first impressions of the raid experience? Because I know they're different than mine.
Yes. So raid for me going into it was a very blind experience. I did not have Star Wars Galaxy of Hero experience. I did not have, Marvel Strike Force, etc., Destiny. I don't have those backgrounds. My background is exclusively coming into this game blind. So a lot of the first impressions, I have to remove the notion that I don't know what to expect. If I remove that from it and I look at it just from face value, my first impression was that it was very well done. And I felt that they released a full game mode almost flawlessly. I think that the animations, which is the number one feedback that I think we all agree with, the animations within all of the raid bosses are brilliant. I love that it was very much kept under wraps with Glut. That was a little bit of a surprise for me. I kind of expected Flotsam Jetsam, and I expected the two Ursulas, the two versions of Ursulas as we went through it from several Tinfoil Hats ago. But I was not expecting the brilliant animations, and especially in Phase 4, having that back camera view was a really different touch. And comparatively easy, because they are three-dimensional programming and you're just switching the axis. But from a playability standpoint, it was a nice touch. And with our three clubs, I had each club intentionally start low. I had everybody under hit as much as possible. We're a top 30 club in End of Mode and Guests, but we started on a tier 3 because I wanted people to just have an understanding of this is what it's going to do. These are what these bosses are going to look like. This is what they're going to feel like. This is what they're going to do. And I kind of said, let's just enjoy it. The first raid, I want you to enjoy. I don't want us to go into trying to do a tier 5 or a heroic raid and just get completely demolished and then we feel defeated. So we enjoyed the very first raid. We had a lot of fun with it. At the same time, we underhit so far that we finished it in like 2.5 hours. So we had a very different experience for those who did get to experience it. So when we went up to the tier 4, all of a sudden, now we're like, hold on. Now we're starting to feel some competition. And I've seen what the T5 and the heroics can do. So I'm excited to move back into as high as tier 5 again for our club. And I think from that first impression, I felt like the difficulties were good. Now trying it on 3 different difficulties. I like the progression within them and the new strategies that have come to be because of each boss, as well as how you move your club around to, okay, you're going to do this, you're going to do this, you're going to fight in all, you're going to fight in one. It creates a lot of inter-club activity that the game needed outside of Conquest.
Mm-hmm. And my experience was very different. I come in as a longtime raider in numerous games. World of Warcraft, right. Dark Age Camelot, Destiny 2 most recently, Final Fantasy 14, Raid Shadow Legends, Empires and Puzzles. Like, I've done all of that. Raids let me down, and they let me down hard in this game.
Wow.
The animations are great. The camera perspective is great. The environments are great. Insta-death mechanics are lazy development and stupid, and I hate them. In addition, I struggled because we did the strategy of undershooting, which I understood. I admit, and you and I have had this conversation, that I disagreed with that decision, but I got why we did it. I didn't get to participate in our very first raid. Neither did my wife and neither did my boy, because it was downed by our club in 40 minutes. And in addition, 5 of our players in our club did 85% of the total damage to the raid bosses. And we had 12 of 50 people participate. So for me, that soured raids a little bit. As a, oh, cool, this is going to be this thing that goes down in an hour, and if you don't happen to be on at the right time, you're not going to get to play at all. We have done a tier 3 since then, and it did take longer, but for one reason or another, we had virtually no participation, and so it took a really long time compared to what it should have taken. Now, I got to participate quite a bit. I got multiple refreshes that time, and that's where I became very aware of, yes, insta-death mechanics are boring, and I don't like them. But besides that, like, I don't find the rewards particularly compelling. Personally, it's another token exchange store that I have 8 of, another one, and it doesn't have that significantly different of stuff in it to me, so it didn't really entice me a whole ton. The difficulty, I come from a very mechanics heavy background in terms of raid difficulty, and I know that's harder to pull off in a mobile title, and I get that. My favorite part of the raid is the stun mechanic in phase 4 for beating Ursula's tentacles, and announcing that to the club and being like, hey, this is a thing, pay attention to this, and having people be like, oh wow, that's cool. That really stood out to me because that's my ability as a player to be like, this is raid mechanics, figure this out and do this, right? But beyond that, it's a giant bullet sponge, to use the video game term, right? It's a giant damage sponge that has a ton of hit points. And it doesn't feel particularly mechanically interesting, I guess, to me. It's a lot of damage. It's cleanse your team really quickly to not have dots eat you alive. And that's kind of the gig. And keep Ursula / the other monsters from going as often as possible, right? I wish there were more of the stun mechanics. like with the tentacles in phase four. I wish there was a blood in the water bait mechanic for Glut in terms of a shark that allowed you to essentially have an artificial taunt as a thing. I wish there were, I really like the wager mechanic essentially in tier three with the contract signing. I like that a lot. I wish that you had multiple options of versions to select in one go. I wish it was like, get X amount of crits or get X amount of this or get X amount of this. I wish I had like three options instead of just one. Because if I go in and it's like, cleanse 15 effects in the next four turns, and I'm like, well, I came in here with, well, I have Jasmine, she can maybe clear stuff, right? But I'm going to decline that contract and be blinded for two turns or whatever, just because, you know, I don't have something, I don't get to pick something that relates to the team I'm given. It's so RNG, and RNG is fine, but too much RNG, especially on such a game-changing mechanic in that, is to me. I'd like to see more contracts and maybe ascending difficulties of contracts where it's like, ah, you decided to take a tier three contract, you're going to get a really powerful buff here because it's harder to accomplish that contract. And so I'd really like to have seen, or in the future see something along those lines, you know, get some tweaks that make that more interesting, because I wanted a mechanic intensive, I wanted a strategy intensive thing. And I know there are people out there, I know you have done some serious strategies for essentially solo clearing. I know Cozy did some stuff for solo clearing, and that's cool. And those existing games,
yes.
Raids didn't hit the mark for me. Raids are a timed club dungeon is what they feel like right now. And I know people love them and that's great, but for me, they're not, they have been just another token grind, right? They didn't hit my personal mark.
For the actual assessment of the entire raid itself, you know, the first impression is it's the bright new shiny thing, of course. And as the raid has kind of come out, a couple of things have come from it. Number one, for me, I think this is going to completely, completely change how current conquest reward tier clubs that are in tier three and tier four are going to start constructing each other, because they're going to realize that when they go to do a raid, you might be a tier three participant right now because you've got five players with a 200,000 summoner score, but then 10 players down below that have like 60. And those people up at the top, they're either going to leave because they're stuck at doing a tier two raid because everybody else can't participate, or they're going to have to alternate their raid tiers so you can kind of participate and then you can kind of participate, but you can't play when you... I think the construction of clubs is going to slow, and the environment of that is going to slowly start to change, and you can even see it happening in the top 100 clubs too. You know, I'm not going to call out anybody, obviously, but I know of clubs that, in preparation to understanding how the raids are going to go, started purging their bottom people right off the bat before it even came out, because we had the, at supposedly, I don't see when it actually happened, but supposedly had the 0 hour cooldown. So you could leave and move around clubs and move people around in between different levels of clubs. If you're an alliance like ours, like it, the culture of a club is starting to change. So the family atmosphere, if you will, of the club, it is disappearing. You're losing the people that are enjoying casual play in conjunction with the people who are, you know, elite players. You know, your club, for example, has a player right now who's just about, or if not just past, a 200,000 summoner score. And then the second person is a 50K drop in summoner score.
Yep.
And in the same club, those 2 through 50 ranked people have about 150,000 summoner score gap in between them. You know, you have people as low as almost, I think, 20K in certain places. And that's where the fun then starts to disappear, because now you're going to start losing people or trying to create a club of everyone close to each other, play styles close to each other, so no one grows too quickly. You all grow together.
Mm-hmm.
And the whales are going to want to find the whales. The VIPs are going to want to find the VIPs. And the free-to-plays are going to want to find the free-to-plays. More so than ever before.
Yep.
The other flaw for me that I found within it, and hopefully there's a very easy fix within this, is within those contracts. You know, I like the mechanic of the contract. I like your idea of having multiple options, because that definitely happened for me. I had on a, I got lucky in one where I went in with a frozen Robin Hood Sean Yu combo. And then I got the crit contract where I need to get four crits off. I was like, I got Kristoff, I got Robin Hood. It was beautiful, beautiful. Kicked butt, got the contract. Within like three turns, I had everybody done. Mm-hmm. But then there are other times where you get the healing contract and you don't have Ariel, you don't have Baymax, you don't have Doc, you don't have trolls, you don't have nothing. And then you're completely shot. The thing I don't like about the contracts is that they lose their allure in the heroic raid. And the heroic raid has one major flaw in it that affects the contracts, is that in the heroic raid, you can forfeit. You can completely forfeit and lose your entire thing. So if you're in phase three, you can go in, see what contract you get. Does it work with your team? No? Okay, just hit decline, forfeit. Start it again. And the heroic raid now, I mean, we have, you know, top, I think there's 12 clubs who have successfully completed a heroic raid at this current time that we're recording this. Some of those clubs can do the raid in under 3 hours at heroic tier. Kudos to you if you can. And I know I understand the strategies on how they're doing so. But when you've got the ability to forfeit, that chance of defeat tanks, absolutely tanks. And that should be part of what the heroic raid is. You should be trying to, from a developer standpoint, have the hardest raid be the hardest. All of the top clubs agree right now. All the top clubs are in 100% agreement, in my personal opinion, based off everything I've taken in from several different discords. Tier 5 is harder than heroic. The only difference is the minimum requirements to participate in them. Because if you have the gear tier 6, 7 star tunes, you can figure out your constructions, you can keep, you know, retrying and forfeiting as much as you want until you get that good hit, until you have that good run. But if you're tier 5, you got 5 attempts. You forfeit, you lose one of those attempts right off the bat. It should be, if anything, the other way around.
Not to mention, forfeiting needs to hurt your tunes.
Say again?
In my opinion, forfeiting needs to hurt your tunes.
Oh, 100%.
You hit forfeit, you lose 25% of your health, and you come back in at 75 instead of 100, and then you start from the back foot.
But it's almost a double play where in one mechanic of the game, in heroic, you have the ability to forfeit. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, in every other tier, you have the ability to escape.
To run.
And then it goes down into escape a character. And down does the ability go. So when you get to tier 5, you have a 20% chance to escape, but you can't forfeit.
Yep.
Meanwhile, in the other end of it, you could just have everybody. Mm-hmm. Completely come back to 100% health.
Yeah.
It's not a mass escape where you escape at whatever health that you escaped at,
right?
Which would help, but it wouldn't fix the, let me fix the contract in phase three.
And that's what I'm saying, is in my opinion, what you do is you give the escape mechanic, but the warning pops out, if you escape, your characters will escape with 75% max health. And then the next, like, essentially you take 25% health or 20% or some number of percent health damage. Because mm-hmm. what you're saying about the contract respam of what works, go. Or where's my golden run? You know, you do that enough times, you come back with a character group that starts at 20% HP. They're not going to have a good run. You have to put a risk in there with regards to it. Because when I heard that there was a forfeit mechanic the same way there is in like Tower of Endurance, I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, whose dumb idea was that? Because I can't even tell you how much that aggravated me as a thing, as a raid player from other games. That was just...
It was the biggest mistake that Glu made with this. And they've slowly, you know, started to identify certain mistakes with some of the adjustments that they've made now within today's patch notes for what will probably go live tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to just the base of what the raids are, you know, for example, the abilities of the individual raid bosses at each phase. Mm-hmm. I do like the way that they laid it out. I do like a lot of the mechanics that they put in place. I love the poison mechanic. Mm-hmm. I can't wait to see that further into other characters that will be playable in the future. So it's not exclusive, hopefully, to just Ursula. Mm-hmm. You know, I could see that coming down the pipeline with other characters. But was it just me, or did I feel like they reversed the difficulties? Because phase one, by a long shot, in my opinion, is the hardest phase. Followed by phase two, followed by phase three, because of the contracts and the inconsistency of them when you're in 1 through 5 tier. Heroic, I'm not going to count because you can forfeit. Yeah. And then the easiest tier is phase four. Mm-hmm. Easiest phase is phase four because of the speed meter change. Now, in phases 1, 2, and 3, roughly, not exact, but roughly, each ability that targets a raid boss increases their turn meter 20% per targeted ability. In phase 4, it's half of that. Yep. So the ability to execute more complex combinations is a billion times easier, or 2 times easier in this case. So when you're going up against a glut, that same configuration that you could have that works on phase 4, which is what I had happen, and we'll talk about later, you try it on phase 1, it may not work exactly the same way because their speed is so completely different. Yeah. I don't know. I think there were some great things that came out of this raid, great visuals, great characters, great animations, great new effects. But from the aspect of full enjoyment, there's either not enough diversity, or, you know, maybe there's a way they can tweak it further.
Yeah, I mean, and theoretically, right, like, raids is a thing. Speaking as a longtime raid player from various games, raids get hotfixed, raids get changed. Essentially, you don't want to touch things until someone has cleared world first, unless something is outright broken, right? Like, if Glut was insta-killing people every other turn because something was screwed up in the code, you know, nobody's going to clear that at that point as a thing. World of Warcraft has examples of bosses that were found out to be mathematically unkillable at optimal played by robots damage, right? Then you fix that. But for the integrity of a world-first race, for the integrity of a game, you keep things until it's cleared, and then you fix it. Because your victor has been crowned, now you adjust the stuff that playtesting with people who aren't paid playtesters, right? Because paid playtesters have this mentality, but apparently nobody playtested constant turn meter reduction, as illustrated by you and Cozy, as a thing. Which, speed is king and taking more turns is the way this game works. How did we not test that? But nobody did. And so it's live. And it has been abused is not the right word because of the cooldown, but it has been utilized, and now it's being nerfed, which we'll talk about in a minute. But they can make changes. You can adjust the things. You can adjust, in my opinion, you adjust Glut's health pool because he just takes too long to kill as a thing for a tier one boss. He is your first go live. He shouldn't take even in our tier two raids, he takes a majority of the time we play, right? It's, we take forever to kill Glut, and then we wipe through the next 3 phases of that thing. You adjust that, you know, Charm makes Flotsam and Jetsam nasty as a thing, because there's nothing worse than all of a sudden getting your big guy charmed and then killing your own teammate who's already got nasty stuff on him. The difficulty ramp should have scaled upward, not just in tiers of raid play where we've talked about how 5 is way harder than heroic, but I should be reaching Ursula coming out of that shipwreck, bedraggled and broken and beaten and ready to really feel heroic overcoming. And I don't feel that way when we hit tier four. I feel it's like, oh yes, cool. There's the animation. It's a cool thing. And like, that's the only insta-kill mechanic that I actually find interesting, but it's only because of the animation that's killing me. I still think it's dumb that I'm being insta-killed, but the animation's super cool. But then Ursula's dead, and it's just like, yay. Cool.
Yeah. Tokens. I feel like they missed a big opportunity with that final animation when you go to pick up your rewards, and it's a super quick... you won. Mm-hmm. It should have been a little bit grander, but that's something else. With the health pools you're talking about, I pulled it up here. Magic Kingdom Alliance broke it down specifically. Mm-hmm. So on heroic level, I'm just going to roughly round it. Glut has 3.7 million. Mm-hmm. Flotsam and Jetsam each have 2.4. Mm-hmm. Ursula on phase 3 has 2.5. And then Ursula phase 4 is 8.2. It is backwards. If anything, I would have found it more interesting if they put the contract one first and have Glut be phase 2, be Flotsam and Jetsam be phase 3. That's just from a Disney standpoint.
That's how I, in my head, that's how I pictured the raid as a thing. Is you fight Ursula, she goes and does her hide and retreat, she sends her henchmen at you, you fight her henchmen, and then you fight Big Bad Ursula. That would make Glut's health pool feel better as a thing.
I feel like it was like that, though. And the reason I feel that way was from the teaser video. Because in the teaser video, if you remember, we were all breaking it down. And if you look at the health bar and you look at the phase bars, when they're showing it, it's phase 3 Ursula, but all of the bars up top are showing phase 1. So I feel like she was moved up into phase 3 and that she was originally phase 1 and then probably had some variation of Glut, Flotsam, and Jetsam, Ursula, because if you look at the combined then on Flotsam, Jetsam, you're looking at almost 5 million. And then sequentially, it makes sense. Then you've got, perfect, Ursula, current phase 3 Ursula, if you put her in the very beginning and then leave everybody else, mm-hmm. just move everybody else down, it would have been perfect. It would have been 2.5, 3.7, 4.9, roughly, and then 8.2. It would have been progressive health pool, and that makes a lot more sense than what it currently is, because phase 3 is done like this every time.
And you add an interesting mechanic where you can tweak contracts to affect your player for raid duration or until reset duration, right? Like, if you put contract first, if you have that phase 3 be phase 1, and you give your contract, to me it's super cool the idea of essentially you get an account-wide buff for the duration of this raid if you fulfill your contract in that time frame. Which you can't do when she's phase 3. But it would be really cool to me to be like, aha, here's your contract. Can you do it? Okay, you got it for 4 phases now. And so, again, the mechanics of this raid and the execution fell a little bit flat for me. And I have seen, even in our very casual club, because in reality, those top people don't care a ton that they're doing that lower tier because they're here to play and have a good time and have stayed with friends when they have the opportunity to go and be at a higher tier of play. But when we do our one push raid a week, I get to deal with my son's tiers because he doesn't get to play, right? He doesn't have the characters yet, because he hasn't been playing very long, to get to participate. And and my wife and I and our son, we moved down right before raids started, because I looked at because we had all talked about, kind of as club leadership, what was going to be the goal, and I knew my son wasn't going to get to play, right? He was not going to get to do raids ever for a long time. And I was like, I can't, right? Like, I'll take the hit, I'll go down, and we've got to go do this because I want my son to get to play. And so I don't like the division that has generated. I don't know what the fix is because I'm not a dev, but I wish there was one, because this is a Disney-themed game, and Disney is about that family experience, and having to possibly sacrifice that, because, I mean, my son was like, well, I want to go down. I'll go down to the club where I get to play, but you and mom can stay here. And we weren't going to do that. There was no way we were going to go where our kid was. And that has been a sore spot for me. So all in all, we're going to move on a little bit just for time crunch. But raids, gorgeous visuals, phases are out of order, difficulty seems wonky. Rewards suck. they're not good enough, in my opinion.
And with that, you know, I sat down with this, you know, and crunched this giant Excel spreadsheet of figuring out the most efficient ways to maximize your raid rewards. Because if you're in a club that's focusing on moving up tunes from gear tier 7 to gear tier 8 specifically, or gear tier 6 to gear tier 7, depending on what the majority of the club wants to do, certain raids yield better rewards per week depending on what your general focus is. So for example, there are many different constructions right now of how you can mix how many raids based on cooldowns and how long it takes you to execute the actual raid and then the cooldown after that. One of the best ways to get rewards right now is actually staying at tier 4. Mm-hmm. And for me, that feels wrong. Yep. Because I feel like, yes, if you can complete the heroic raid in 3 hours or less, one, you deserve a 48-hour cooldown. Because then the rewards would be so out of whack. I did the math. It would be so ridiculously out of whack that if you're not doing heroic, you're not going to get a gear tier 8 character forever. Mm-hmm. So they had to put that mechanic in there, and they figured out that much, because the jump from 5 to heroic, both in difficulty and rewards, is very obvious and clear. Yeah. But if you're choosing between a tier 3, 4, and 5 reward, for example, and you're only working on trying to get droplets because you have more people that want to build a gear tier 6 character and they don't care about the sea urchins and they don't care about the coral and lightning bolts, none of that matters. Doing a tier 3, knocking it out in literally, as you know, we did in under 3 hours, doing that on a cycle, you get more raid tokens, and you get actually as many raid tokens as a heroic who does it in every 6 hours. It does it in under 6 hours, 2 to 3 times a week. Yeah. It's insane. It's a little lopsided. You know, I don't mind having it as an exchange where you can pick and choose if you want to focus on droplets. But the values in the exchange are way out of whack, are all different kinds of wonky. I am not spending 21,000 raid tokens on 3 tokens for Horned King when I can get 5 of them in the Sorcerer's Exchange. Sorry, in the club exchange. Like, dude, it's just wrong. It's so wrong. Some of them I get. Dash, maybe at 7,000 per token, I can understand a little tiny bit. But you're going to push Horned King with a good raid mechanic, and you're pushing a little too hard. They did it right by balancing, for example, Dash versus Mr. Incredible and Mrs. Incredible. Their values are different. But it needs to be tweaked. The values don't make sense for now that especially almost all of those characters that are in there, you can farm. And you can farm them in other resources and locations for more efficient values. You should not be buying tokens for characters in your raid exchange. It should be exclusively gear. Mm-hmm. And the best values in the gear right now are the gear tier 6 droplets and the gear tier 7 pieces. The gear tier 8s are the exclusivity, which is nice to be able to use your raid tokens, especially if you're in that 4, 5, or heroic tier right now. You don't even get gear tier 8 things if you're in 3 or lower.
Right.
And that's a little sad. Just like the Ursula tokens. I hate that the Ursula tokens are going in the heroic raid.
That is, to me,
also the
biggest screw up of this whole raid. It is. Yeah. Ursula tokens should be across the board, including in tier 1, but maybe it one token in tier 1 per clear. But the fact that they are not in the lower tiers is the biggest example of whale catering I've ever seen in a single game. And yeah. I will be honest, it was almost enough for me to uninstall. It yeah. was that close. Because it was just like, it was this long conversation with my wife and son about the fact that, like, are you kidding? Like, this is the biggest example of whale catering, except maybe the council thing. But we don't have enough information about that, so we're not talking about it tonight.
True.
So there's some frustration there, but we'll...
With the raid, I mean, with the raid ability on Ursula... The easy counter, I should say, from Glue, because they would put the devil's advocate out there. Well, you can get it from your raid milestones. And what they neglect is that in your raid milestones and how often they reset, and if you do it at tier one or tier two, your ability to get an Ursula token is, or two tokens, is every 2 weeks. And that is, in my opinion, not good enough. You know, there should be legendary characters that you work on towards an event, and we'll get into what we think is coming with Beauty and the Beast, for example. But I feel that after all the buildup and all the plausibility, and then you put out a character and you see her her live kit that eventually people will have around March-ish, approximately, in those top clubs at 5 stars, that she's going to be, for lack of a better term, a beast. And she has a unique leadership. She has 3 passives. Like, it's a kit unlike anything we've seen. And to have it so removed from everybody else, to me, shows one thing and one thing only, that in February, she will be purchasable. I think that you're going to see 30 tokens available for $49.99, just like you see Triton. Come February, you can buy 3 packs at a time, just like almost every other pack, and that's how you're going to see the whales further get catered to. Now, I'm not saying, you know, I'm the skinniest of dolphins. I understand that. But as someone who has invested in the game, and someone who is choosing to do Tier 3 and Tier 4 raids in preparation for a Tier 5 raid right now, I'm losing out on the option of even having it. Your tier raid should depict your number of tokens. It should have gone 1 through 5, 7. That's how I would have done it personally. The only solve I could see to that, to get people to want to push a little bit further, is if you're really playing into this game, in my opinion, 4-star character is kind of a good baseline that if you have 3 teams of 4-star characters, you've played this enough to get to level 30. At that point, you're now playing in a tier 2. So how do you incentivize someone to want to continue in the game? Just like when you start in the game, as you continue on from level 1 up through level 20, you were unlocking different game modes, and this unlocks now at level 30. By level 30, you should now also be focusing on 5-star characters progressively. For the very first time, you're thinking about, ooh, I want to get a 5-star character. Because most of your tunes should be around 4 stars if you're somewhere between level 20 and level 30. The incentivizing push to do that would then be at a tier 3 raid, which is 5-star characters. The only level, quote unquote, that you could start getting Ursula tokens. So the other way you could have gone about it would be tier 3 get 1 token, tier 4 gets 2, tier 3 gets 5, gets 3. Now I'm saying my number's wrong. Tier 5 gets 3 reward tokens of Ursula, and the heroic still gets their 5. So there's still the gap between 5 and heroic. Yeah. You want a little bit of a gap there for if you're going to make something sequential and have something sound heroic. Mm-hmm. It should have been in lower tiers. I don't know which side I lean towards of should it be in all tiers or should it be in at least 3, 4, and 5 to push you at level 30? 3,
4, and 5. I lean into the... As a player who raids should have a challenge, I lean into the, it should have been, it should not be in every tier, but it should be in more than just the last one. Because by putting into the last one, the only message that came across, and I pay for VIP on 3 accounts in my house. We are no longer purely free to play players. We give
right.
Glue our VIP money. But it very much shows that the only thing that mattered was money. And that made me very, very, very upset as a player.
Yeah, so I pulled it up here just as we're talking about it to confirm. You know, if you're going in on a tier one raid, you only have 3 attempts, and you have to have star rarity 3 minimum. So to go in on tier one is almost automatic by the time you're at that standpoint. If it's automatic, it makes me lean towards not having Ursula in tier one at all. But having it be the thing to move up into tier two or potentially as high as tier three, where now you've got more attempts, you've got more tunes, but most importantly, you want to farm it a little. At that point, you're trying to farm wide because now you're not just doing wide farming for conquest, you're doing wider farming for raids in the same breath. Where, I mean, I was talking about it earlier today. My goal is I'm trying to farm 5 conquest teams right now that are at a certain minimum level of stars, minimum level of gear tier, before I continue to push on to more gear tier 7s or more gear tier 8s because I'm in that point in the game.
Yeah.
But even, and I've talked about this, I believe, on a previous podcast, where a piece of advice I wish I never got was right from the very beginning, you should be trying to get 50 gear tier 5, 5-star characters. And this confirms for me that that's no longer the case. Now you need 25. The number is 25 magically. Push to gear tier 5, push to 5 stars. So now you at least have 5 options to go in on a gear tier 3 raid and get some pretty decent rewards out of it. From 2 to 3 is a very large gap in rewards too, and that's another story. But I feel that after watching them unroll, seeing people starting to get Ursula tokens, hearing the feedback from the community, and watching us for the first time talk every single day about turn meter rather than a couple people really truly understand it and kind of start to spread the knowledge privately. Now it's the number one topic of conversation is how do you control? How do you do turn meter? And then because several of us started testing different ideas, we figured out how to break the raid. And people could literally solo not just, you know, 1 million damage or 2 million. They could solo whole phases themselves and even entire raids themselves. And that is why they made the adjustments they have so far. And as much as I personally hate them, because literally yesterday I was live on stream, I tested a team construction on a tier 3 raid. I got to phase 4. I said, technically, this mechanic should work. And I did.
And it did.
It shocked me. My viewership shot up. I was like, whoa, what's going on? Oh my God, it's actually happening. It's actually happening. I'm about to solo this whole thing. Because I figured out how to understand the turn meter with a couple of different unique characters that, you know, may not have been used before. And some other constructs were talked about in Discords prior. So we took different pieces of different things. And I created a team. And sure enough, it worked. Mm-hmm. The next day, we start seeing changes. So you go ahead and start talking about the changes stuff.
So let's talk quick about kit adjustments, and then we'll get into my reaction to those kit adjustments again as a longtime raid player. So yes. Tactics is no longer effective on passive activation for Merlin. Now, I have not unlocked Merlin yet, so I have not looked at his kit. Oh, I did. I unlocked Merlin today. Good job, me. On turn start, 30% chance to increase your spell charge by 10%. Passives making that a 100% activation, especially when it, you know, goes up to tier 4 and things like that, can get pretty nuts. I understand that particular change, especially since I think he's one of the only people where tactics was affecting his passive.
Tactics affecting anybody what is still something or what it affects on people. I mean, Merlin was very, very broken from launch. Literally, there were programming mechanics wrong with him. When they did the update in 13.0, he kind of got a nice smoothed out fix, and then they updated how the spell charge and also explained a little bit more clearly the difference between spell and ability within his passives. He got a good fix overall. I understand why they had to make this change, because if it was executing 100% of the time, every time he goes, it just automatically goes another 10% on spell, another 10% on spell. And that's how you end up seeing, you know, I don't know if you've seen the photos of the Matrix team where it's just all bubbles and all shadows of bubbles, because you could pull a Peter Pan's shadow like this and all of a sudden you have 10 Cobra bubbles on the floor and it literally looks like the Matrix. It's fantastic. Wow. But you can now, by putting this back into there, it with that reduction confirms for me more than anything else that spells really don't matter, because spell charge is so low during the raid.
Yeah.
So low, because it seems to be, I don't know if you got this impression, it's less about direct damage. It's more about effect damage. And that's not affecting the spell charge. Mm-hmm. Is it that way for you too, in your mind, from a programmer standpoint? Like,
yeah, that's definitely what it seems to be. There's a reason why, you know, it's effective, why you get less, like Shadow is really good with Genie, but you're not seeing Shadow as much as you want to be seeing Shadow with Genie, because I mean, mm-hmm. in theory, if it was working just based upon pure damage to charge your spell, you would just exponentially increase how quick you get more Shadow with the way Genie works with Shadow, but you're not seeing that as a thing. So yeah, I think that we still don't have, and I hate it about the mechanics of this game, I hate that we don't have a very clear explanation of how things like spell charge works, how, while we have a better understanding, especially after this past week, of turn meter is still this weird, nebulous interaction between speed and some magical hidden base stat that we don't know anything about, and that there's a lack of transparency that bothers me on a couple of those things. But Merlin charging your spells up very quickly in general, but especially in, you know, in some of those settings, like you talked about with the Cobra Bubbles team, or I didn't see the Matrix team, but I saw the Merlin Genie combination team. And it didn't, like, it literally got to the point where it felt like the person I was playing against was allowing me to kill low-level characters just so they had another spot for another Genie Shadow, right? Like,
yep.
They were throwing a high-level Merlin and a high-level High-Star Genie on the field with three chumps and allowing me to kill those three chumps just so they could have more Shadow spots for Genie and then just annihilate face. So it's a weird... I get why they made this change. In addition, same kind of thing with passives. Silence will no longer prevent passive abilities from working. This is stupid. This is,
I know,
so dumb, because it silence affecting passives, A, makes total sense with how silence mechanics work in most games as a thing. Yeah. But B, silencing out certain really, really powerful passives was one of the best ways to make things, you know, to counterplay on certain teams, to interact with certain overpowered as crap teams. I mean, the Frozen team is still stupid, but you could hurt some of their ability to just wreck your face when it's not even their turn by silencing out Anna so she's not getting her stupid passive when Elsa gets hurt. Like, This change bothers me. I'm not thrilled. And clearly there is an event somewhere that's abusing it. But I don't care.
It's not an event that's abusing it, in my opinion. It's the fact that the meta is super silence. And this is their attempt to say that if you're going to play a super silence team, the defense needs to have another opportunity to win because you're now not restricting their passives. However, they still screwed it up, because now all you ended up doing is making it stronger. Elsa, specifically, if you silence Elsa, you stop those crystals from coming on her next turn. It's just her basic, and she doesn't gain going from times two to times three to times four automatically. You slow down her ability.
Yep.
Now,
doesn't do it anymore.
It doesn't matter. Now it doesn't do it. Doesn't matter. Even if you kill her early and you have her silenced and you just keep throwing things at her to try to not have glacial armor, because if you killed her while she was silenced, glacial armor didn't pop up. Now, it will pop up again.
I know.
And
it has ruined my life.
Same thing with Cobra Bubbles. You could go ahead and silence Cobra Bubbles, but it stopped him from giving out tactics to other people. So now if you silence him, it's going to give out tactics anyway still. Well, it's a chance, but the chance could still execute. You tried to make the defense against Super Silence stronger. But at the same time, you made Super Silence tremendously stronger. Because now it doesn't matter if you go after Elsa first.
Nope.
Now it's, look, she's going to get empowered in four turns. Hero, done.
Yeah.
Put the ticket on her. Speed increase, done. It's just, her to get empowered now is so ridiculously fast.
She's the most broken character in the game. By
a
mile.
And I love
already.
And hate her. Oh, yeah.
And now
I
she's
love and hate
worse.
Her. Yeah.
It's so.
Now she took a bigger step. She took an even bigger step to being the
she's
switching.
She's an S++ character now. She was an S+ character already. Now she's an S++. There is such a gap between her and anyone else who's close that it's insane. It just, I cannot even. And the fact that, you know, it's the first time, because one of the things I liked is I liked that I run Big Hero 6. I got Baymax when the event was here. I ignored all advice and I spent raid tokens on Big Hero 6 characters because I not only unlocked Big Hero 6, but I went from 5 to 6 stars on everybody in a week and unlocked a 6-star Baymax instead. So he's not just that 5-star squishy guy that he was.
Yeah.
And I can beat Frozen teams 500, 600 points above my level. Because I can stun out Kristoff, and I can silence out Elsa, and I can silence out Anna. I can't do half of that strategy anymore. And I'm now kicking myself that I was like, I made a choice. When Big Hero 6 came out, I was at a crossroads where I said, do I farm Big Hero 6 or do I farm Frozen? You can only farm one. And I went for Big Hero 6 because this was before everybody had theorized all the Big Hero 6 stuff. And I looked at passives and I looked at abilities and I said, I can beat Frozen with this team. And so I chased Big Hero 6. I still think I can beat Frozen with my team, but it will be a dice roll instead of a outplaying certain mechanics. They took away counterplay on Elsa, which is the only way to beat Elsa is with counterplay. And I'm, until they give me a vastly bigger reflection ability on characters, Elsa's gonna just sit at S++, and I'm not happy.
Now it'll be interesting to see if the meta starts to change from figuring out triple silence to triple stun. And being that stun is now the only way to kind of skip everything, we have a shot to, you know, maybe say, okay, let's reassess here. Because, you know, if you're going to throw out stuns and stuns and stuns, does Buzz Lightyear come back into the picture? Because he can do a stun every 3 turns. I mean, there's this change could change. If people start theorizing and realizing the huge difference between silence and stun, now that the passives are not going to be stopped to kind of soften, if you will, silence.
Yeah.
I
will admit that silence was a bit harder of a CC than it should have been. But at the same time, it reveals massive flaws in certain kit designs that are too strong. You know, the power creep in the game has been bonkers, except for Elsa, who stands out as, why is she so broken? Someone explain to me why she's still this broken.
I talk about it all the time on stream. I love her and I hate her. I love using her. I hate going up against her. And now, starting tomorrow, I'm curious to see how it's going to go when I'm facing another Elsa and I've got a completely different construction of tactic now with the current team that I use, because I now have to factor in that no matter what, that Elsa is going to get empowered in four turns. No matter when those four turns happen, it also changes your stone construction too on Elsa, because is it worth it now to eat, knowing that you're guaranteed it, silence or not, do you have to put a speed stone on her? Or should I just go straight up offense and completely wreck people? Because I'm running a hero combo with her. Anywho, who's just going to... Yeah.
I can honestly see people running health stones, because what's going to become the new meta is burst Elsa first. The only way to beat her is stun out Kristoff and or whoever's tanking and burst Elsa hard. And I can honestly see the possibility of health stones suddenly becoming the new thing on Elsa, just so she gets through those four turns.
Yeah, like mine's levels, you know, I have a, Elsa's the best, I beefed her up. She's level 60, I have her gear tier 7, 7 stars. Her health pool is only 14,000, you know, versus others, which are in the, you know, Hero has a 16,000 health pool plus at the same gear tier and stars. So if you're spamming Elsa to get that, if you have a 10% health zone, that's beefing that up to 16,000 right there.
Yeah.
So I can see that definitely happening too.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Make a difference, because that for a long time, when I played Kingdom before I got my Big Hero 6 team up, that was my strat against was crowd control Kristoff, you know, through turn meter manipulation with Aladdin and other things and burst Elsa. And that was the only way you could win. I mean, the only way I could win at my tier level. But I think that we're going to, it will do some interesting things to the meta in terms of what do we run as stones on Elsa, but she ain't going anywhere, right? She's still going to sit there in her ice castle as queen. I'm not bitter. So let's talk about the raid adjustments. I am very bitter. About the raid adjustments. So we're at a point right now where, because of bot play, my wife and I just swap positions in our Sorcerer's tournament because we're in the same seed. And so in order to stay in our top 100, we just swap back and forth between each other. Because you know how there's like those magical numbers that for some reason people ignore? Like they just don't seem to get, they don't come up in the randomizer very often. We've both found two very safe spaces where we have to refresh like 25, 30 times to see each other. And then we just swap. And I'm worried I'm not going to be able to consistently beat her to continue to do our swap now, because she can beat me if it's bot play and I can beat her if it's bot play, but we'll see how these changes affect things. So the big change, the one that you and I are going to have disagreeing opinions on.
Oh yeah.
Is the raid adjustments. Subsequent reductions of speed meter are decreased in amount with each reduction until the character takes their turn. This has a big impact on Cozy's Tinkerbell strat and your Big Baby strat with Sven, where the objective was literally just don't let the raid boss have a turn and just kill it. I jumped into your stream yesterday when you did it. I watched for about 20 minutes. I rolled my eyes, left the stream up to give you the view, and went and did something else, because I was like, this is a, this
wrong.
This doesn't look fun, right? Like it was fun for you because it was, oh, I figured this out. But like, it would get really old after like once. But at the same time, it was wrong. It was a revelation of a bad gameplay design with the way you can manipulate turn meter.
Mm-hmm.
And it won't work in live, which is why it's only a raid adjustment, right? Because it doesn't work in a PvP setting, because everybody's speed is, you're not, the raid bosses are designed to let you get a few turns in before you go. That's their design philosophy. But things like the Tinkerbell strat, things like the Big Baby with Sven strat, like it just shut down the raid, and it made it so it's essentially like there was an example of a Destiny boss where if you stood on a very specific pillar, the boss forgot you existed. It was like a blind spot in the boss's code. And so you could just sit there and shoot the boss, and the boss never attacked you. It just didn't ever happen.
It's the same idea. And you have frustration because you discovered it, you broadcast it, you were like, hey, this is this super cool.
Hold on. I do want to jump in and make one thing very clear too. You know, I'm very happy with, and for those who don't know what we're talking about, I put up a construction that was using Big Baby, Sven, Bubbles Hero, and Honey Lemon. Now, pieces of that, I don't take any credit for in any way, shape, or form. And I want to get that really clear out there because that is a topic of conversation, unfortunately, about me. I don't take credit for being the first person to say this construction works. I'm not the first person to say that Sven is the best person in raids. You know, I've known about his stacking of his crits, didn't think about the possibility of using it in the raids because I just kind of dismissed Sven as an option. And then we started a conversation, me and several people earlier in the day, and it made me think of a video that I saw on Facebook originally, and I even clipped it and use it in my hype video for Twitch, where he does a 1. Almost 8 million damage single hit because of all the stacked crits and the progressive thought of it. Big Baby was the only thing I'll take any kind of notion of. I thought of that for because it wasn't using the basic ability. It was using a special, but a special you could use quite frequently because it's only a 2 magic refresh. Yeah, 2 magic ability recharge. So that's the only part I will take credit for because I hadn't seen anybody do that specifically. Right. Now, that manipulation of turn meter and the understanding of how to manipulate turn meter is one of the biggest things that has come out of raids, where a lot of people would see that on a person's kit and they go, okay. And they just kind of dismiss it. Show me the attack down. Show me the blind. Show me the, you know,
which
the
is so very... funny.
Which is very obvious, and this is part of the game mechanics. It's very obvious to see because it's a little icon above the character. Just because you don't see that little yellow line move that little bit over, and you don't understand necessarily how it works, doesn't mean that it's not a huge part of the game.
Yeah, and it's that's
Raids has revealed that. Yeah.
Well, and it's funny to me why I have struggled with this as a thing. Why when everyone was like, "Oh my gosh, have you guys thought of this?" I was like, "Yes."
Yeah,
because if you look at the way I have played the game since day one, it was always about turn meter manipulation through a combination of slow, which just slows down their turn meter gain, and removing turn meter. You know, Aladdin's carpet is so underrated because of the turn meter reduction that it does. Same thing with Mickey's brooms. Like, so many people are like, oh, well, brooms hit so many times. It's like, no, it also removes turn meter. Like, it has a chance to remove turn meter. That makes brooms really, really strong. You know, people look at, I think the one that I have been seeing a lot that people is slept on is stealing speed meter on GoGo. Because you actually not only manipulate their turn meter, but you manipulate yours with her ability. And
right.
That has been one of the things I've been using in a lot of circumstances because I have had, you know, I get the curious emote when I do certain moves in PvP because it's like, oh, well, you probably could have killed here. But it's like, yeah, but now your Kristoff isn't going to go next turn, but my hero is, or my Honey Lemon is, and I'm going to stun your Kristoff and you won't get to taunt. You know, turn meter manipulation has been, for me, the most powerful mechanic in the game since I picked it up in July. And it's so interesting to see all of a sudden people being like, I have never thought of this. Like,
they're paying more attention to it.
Yeah.
Which is why I understand that they needed to make the change that they did. If you haven't read the current patch notes, they talk specifically about it's saying the words decreased in amount with each reduction.
Yeah.
Now, starting tomorrow for us, I'm curious to see what they mean by that. And I'm going to literally sit there when Bubbles does his giant stare down and typically reduces 70% speed turn meter. And if it's within the same turn, you're going to see a screenshot before, a screenshot after. I'm going to put them right next to each other and see how much of a difference it's reducing down. I'm going to figure that out because then that's going to completely change how I might want to run a team. I'm going to run the exact same Sven team as I did on phase 4 And I want to see, is it reducing it like 10% every time? Or is it, oh, it's half. Right. And now you're just going to get completely demolished 10 times faster.
Right.
Because now you can't keep up with reduce it 70, reduce it 30, reduce it 30, reduce it 30, whether you're doing Tinkerbell, Pinksy Papa, what all these other variations that are now coming out on manipulating the turn meter, you know, Simba, Olaf, etc. Frozone, for those who haven't thought of it, and I'm still trying to figure out a way to make Frozone work. I will. It is my goal, because he has a great kit for raids, and I can't figure out how to use it. But he's just slow, as weird as that sounds. But I understand why they had to do it. Fully understand why they had to do it, because people were soloing full phases as well as multiple phases.
Yeah. Oh, and imagine how easy a heroic is going to be once you just have your entire team sync all of their, you know, all right, everybody needs a gear tier 7, 7-star tank. Make it happen.
Everybody? No, like 3 people.
Right. But I mean, yes, 3 people, but then your raid's still going to take an hour, right? You have a whole group of people do it, and you just throw literally every single person at a raid boss that just eliminates things. Like, your raid, you're so
who can do it fastest.
Yeah. It just is, it's just silly. It's, yeah. It's just nonsense.
I get it. I get why they did it. I find it hysterical, just personally, that that change comes out the day after I do it for the first time.
Yep.
I'm not saying in any way, shape, or form I'm the reason, because I am not.
Right. I mean,
this has been, people have been doing this now for a week and a half now.
2 weeks, 3 weeks. Yep.
Several people, and many people have figured out different combinations of these characters, and Merlin being the raid king because of that spell charge, I get why they had to make his tactics adjustment specifically, but he's still going to be a raid king. You know, spells are spells, and spells really barely matter, except for Grandma Tala. Grandma Tala and Cauldron really are the only ones that, in my opinion, now show true strength. You could make arguments for anything else that attacks, including Trigger, because he at least will keep on a continuous damage. But, I mean, I don't know. I'm just disappointed. I get it, but...
Right. And I understand. All right, let's change gears. We have complained / talked about raids.
Change cogs.
We will change cogs.
There we go.
Beauty and the Beast. We got a very surprising update, for me at least, when all of a sudden Lumiere and Cogsworth were just appearing on the map as a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And in flash gifts and other assorted stuff. And I grew up in a house where Beauty and the Beast is essentially a religion. My mother is one of the world's biggest Beauty and the Beast fans. I think there's probably $10,000, $15,000 worth of collectibles scattered throughout that house of, you know, Beauty and the Beast stuff. And so, you know, it's a big deal that there was Lumiere and Cogsworth. Then today we got the announcement in patch notes that we're getting 3 more nodes with Maurice, who, for those who are confused, is Belle's father in the movie, Crazy Old Maurice, Mrs. Potts, and Belle. I have an opinion, because they also announced today that we're getting a Beauty and the Beast event. My assumption, and much of the community's assumption, is that Beast will be the legendary character reward at the end of that event. It should have been the other way around. Beast should have been farmable and Belle should have been the legendary character. That's just my stance on it, and I am frustrated that it isn't the case, because I don't find Beast for 90% of the movie to be a compelling character in that movie. He's a vital character, but not compelling. Belle is what makes that movie tick, and Belle should have been the legendary. With that particular complaint out of the way, we can move on to the actual important stuff. But I have discovered, based upon discussion with other creators,
Yeah, extraterrestrials videos are super critical of glue. Yes. It's my job to give glue critique as a thing.
It's opinion. We're supposed to.
Yep. That's why we make the show, people. I have not unlocked Lumiere and Cogsworth. Both of my wife has unlocked Cogsworth and my boy has unlocked Cogsworth. I've not. I have continued my, up until the other day when Big Hero 6 went away, I got 3 of 5 to 7 stars. I was at 5 stars at the start, and I have spent gems that I hoarded, and I have spent energy refreshes, and I've spent raid tokens, and I got 3 of 5 to 7 stars within that 2-week period from 5. In an effort to get a 7-star Baymax. And so I've been kind of occupied. So I haven't done anything with that. But my wife has gotten Cogsworth, as is my son. They haven't gotten Lumiere because he's vastly further away because of his star level. I believe it's DSA Savage made a video about it. I haven't watched it yet, but I do know DSA Savage made a video about their kits, analyzing them. Mm-hmm. I haven't even opened their pages to look at what they do because it would have distracted me from what I was doing. So I, in terms of goals, is because I would have had
focus.
It was a conscious decision to be like, I cannot let this distract me from fighting to get BH6 to where I want it to be. And so we haven't looked into that. You have, because you're you. Tell me a little bit about, we'll start with Cogsworth. Tell me a little bit about Cogsworth and Lumiere, and then let's do some speculation about this event and do some speculation about the Maurice, Mrs. Potts, Bell, likely beast characters, and then let's get on out of here.
So before talking about Cogsworth, you have to understand Gaston's kit is what I've started to discover the last 2 days, because leading up to hearing about Cogsworth and Lumiere, and then once they were dropped, I was originally under the full assumption that these characters were going to be part of a tower event. That was my personal take on it. I thought it was going to be, you need Cogsworth for tower, just kingdom characters for tower 1, Cogsworth up to a certain star level for tower 2, and then Lumiere eventually for tower 3, and then you'd unlock Beast. You know, that was my personal take on it. Then it was brought to my attention that hiding in the passive, literally in the bottom, if you open up Lumiere's kit, it doesn't look like his passive has more information underneath it, just based off the spacing and everything. So I never scrolled down on it, where it did explain that it shows the names Mrs. Potts and Bell. So we had 4 characters guaranteed coming out. Now, with that said, knowing Gaston's kit, looking at Cogsworth, Gaston's kit is built with Cogsworth in mind, because Cogsworth is built to counter Gaston, which confirms for me after the last 2 days of really, you know, just talking with other people, looking deeper at these characters, which I have not unlocked in any way, shape, or form. I have stayed the course. I have unlocked I finished my Incredibles minus Jack-Jack this week. That was my major focus. And I've got a couple of other tunes I want to get to 7 stars. But Gaston grants haste, inflicts blind, inflicts defense down. Cogsworth does exactly the opposite. He will literally flip defense. He will cleanse blind specifically for kingdom characters, if that doesn't scream countering Gaston. Like, if you look at their 2 kits side by side, they're basically trying to counter each other. And Lumiere even has cleansing ability built in there to counter specifically Gaston. So what I think this now is copy and paste Incredibles, Frozen, Beauty and the Beast. You're going to have multiple characters that you're going to have to unlock at different star levels to progress through the event. Starting with Cogsworth, probably Maurice and Mrs. Potts will both be maybe 3 stars or 3-4 stars. Lumiere, and you'll need them progressively going on through. Whatever it is. Some variation of that. So that way, eventually, you have to have all 5 of them, Lumiere, Cogsworth, Maurice, Mrs. Potts, and Bell, the five of them to go up against Gaston and his whole bunch of LeFous or townspeople or whatever.
The mob.
LeFou better be in the game. Go up against the mob. That's a good way to word it. And they take down, you know, Gaston, and you unlock Beast that way at 5 stars in a legendary format. I understand 100% your point on having Belle be the cornerstone, and Belle should have been the ultimate character, because I agree. Belle should be a princess leader that we work towards unlocking, that her synergy has nothing to do with everybody else in the sense of her leadership, because then you've got to choose how you want to use her. You unlock Beast because Beast has synergy with all of his tunes, which I would have loved to have seen Cogsworth, Lumiere, and Mrs. Potts have a mythical tag on them, because then that would have completely thrown people off. Because I'm sorry, it's a talking candlestick. If that's not mythical, I don't know what is. But that could have been a fun take on, wait, maybe I can use these characters like this. Do I want to farm Lumiere for Stitch Tower or for Tower 10 in Conquest? Like, if now it's just a Kingdom character.
I would have liked to see him have a double tag.
Yeah.
I would like to have seen him be Kingdom Mythical, because Kingdom makes sense, but Mythical also makes sense. And I would have loved to see Kingdom Mythical as a thing. I also am excited to see skins of them as humans.
Or as part of their, like, some kind of spell where if so-and-so tunes are on there, it grants offense up. However, it transforms them or even if it's for one ability, they transform to their human form as a anti-polymorph, if you will. I don't know. Some kind of polymorph back into it. You gain almost like an empowered. You gain offense up, defense up, whatever. You do so-and-so attack and you lose empowered. You go back to your mythical form. You know, that would have been cool. Not built in their kits, but that would have been cool. Everyone's speculating with Beast possibly coming into an unlock format with this and not just being a whole bunch of characters. There should be something that this worked towards. What's Beast going to be? Is he going to be another Kingdom leader? Is he going to be a Beauty and the Beast leader? Is he going to be a mythical leader, which we've all been dying for? You know, what direction of this is this event going to go? I know for me, now in just over 2 hours' time from when we're recording this, these characters will have to be in the card collection, because they also stated in the patch notes that they're adding them to the chests right away. Mm-hmm. So if that's the case, that means the full cards are going to be available on here. Tomorrow morning, I'm going to know if Beauty and the Beast, for me, is going to be worth investing in or not. Whether it throws Beast in there and they just didn't talk about it in the patch notes to give us something else to look forward to, or is Belle going to be the ultimate character for us to work towards, where maybe we just need, you know, Lumiere, Cogsworth, Mrs. Potts, and Belle, and Maurice is the mythical, you know, leader, if you will. And so I don't know. Even though he's farmable, it could be weird things with the, we don't know. There's a lot that we don't know for the next just over 2 hours for us. And when it does drop and we look into their kits and we kind of decide, whoa, this is going to break this. This is going to break this meta. Or, you know, if Cogsworth is flipping blinds and Lumiere is flipping blinds and Cogsworth is flipping haste, is Belle going to flip silence?
Yeah, when we discover the silence changes weren't actually targeted at Super Silence, they were targeted at it not destroying the Beauty and the Beast team before it goes live. Because we're all of a sudden
very likely
mega passives on all these other characters.
Yeah, because whenever you, the audience, are listening to this, these characters are now going to be available. We're recording this 2 hours before the characters are going to drop into the card collection. So this is all a little bit of a tinfoil hat, if you will, on what are these characters going to do. But the thing I'm hoping, more than anything, I'm hoping they're not going to do or need for whatever this Beauty and the Beast event will be, is that you are not going to need Gaston with Cogsworth and Maurice and Mrs. Potts to do whatever you need to do. I hope not, because it makes absolutely no sense. And if they do that, then they're losing the Disney understanding and now they're just putting out game material. I'm hoping that's not the case because it's going to piss off a lot of people who play this because of Disney, not because they play it because it's a game.
Yeah, I am hoping that it is much like The Incredibles, where you're fighting against the mob and maybe you see LeFou and then you see
guest on, and I'm super excited for the environments. I'm super excited to see, you know, the town and see, you know, on the castle and see in,
it exists.
Yeah. They're all there.
But it exists. The little town layout is currently a background in the game. Yep. I'm going to be disappointed if they put out a Beauty and Beast event this with all these new characters and they use the exact same background. If it's not something new, if it's not the Beast's castle, the entrance, the courtyard, snow time, I don't know, something.
Yeah.
You know, that to me that would make the most sense. Right now, release it, put it out as the courtyard, you know, where they you technically later on in the movie you have the snowball fight scene, and then as you go through, since the Beauty and the Beast rewards are going to be the calendar rewards for the daily check-in, like around 2 weeks before Christmas, it switches to the snow version of that environment. Then it's like, okay, now you get it. Now you're staying on the Disney path and you're not losing that track.
Yeah.
I really hope that they nail this one because there is a very large following with this franchise. And like I said, I'd say maybe a good quarter of the people who play this game because they like Disney characters. Oh, that's what got me into the game.
I would say it's at least half.
Minimum 25%, I'm saying.
Oh, for sure.
But a lot of people obviously play because they like this play style of game. You know, a lot of MSF players started as also went to Disney Sorcerer's Arena. A lot of Swaga players also went to Disney Sorcerer's Arena, not because they love Syndrome, but because they like that game style, and let's see what this company does with it. Okay, they did this well. And, oh yeah, I remember that kid movie when I was a kid, and it became secondary.
Yeah.
Many people joined this game, like I said, including myself, because of Disney being the primary reason I went to download the game, because I'm a Disney nut. Worked for the company, loved the product, visited parks for years, worked in the parks. I appreciate when they get the Disney things right and they do a good animation, they get those little hints and tricks. And if they get Beauty and the Beast right, I mean,
it's a win.
The thin dolphin might get chubby again.
All righty. Well, we're going to get on out of here. Thank you very much, Matt, for joining me as always. Thanks for
always
handling my 2 week break as I went hard on a different game for 2 weeks. If you are watching this on YouTube, I make content here. I do not stream on Twitch. I stream on YouTube and I make content on YouTube. You can check out all of the content. It'll be there in the sidebar. Be sure and hit like, hit subscribe. So A, the algorithm pushes me out to more people, but I focus on DSA. And I make Destiny content as well as a couple of other podcasts that are in the works about both Destiny and a couple other games. Matt, though, tell us about where we can find you on the internet.
Sure. Easiest spot is I prefer to go live on Twitch as of right now. Typically doing Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I have a large Discord community as well. You can contact me and communicate with my club members and other members of the Twitch community that have come to join us in there as well. Easiest thing, Edna Mode and Guests is where you will find me on Twitch. And Edna Mode and Guest is the name in Discord. Reach out to me through there. YouTube content possibly coming next year. But right now, I'm going to continue the Twitch train at least until 2020 is over.
All righty. And I will have the links to to Matt's Discord as well as Matt's Twitch down in the description. Be sure and go over there, give him a follow, check all that out. But for now, we're going to get on out of here. If you are in the United States, you'll be watching this on Thanksgiving. Happy and safe Thanksgiving. Please celebrate responsibly. Keep in mind the situation we are all in. But until next time, on behalf of Matt Strubble, I've been Eric Taylor, a.k.a. The Extraterrestrial. Good night. Good luck. Stay safe, stay healthy, love one another. Peace on Earth, Earthlings. Bye, everybody.